The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. How are young boys and girls pulled into the world of sex trafficking? The average age for the first-time exploitation is 15 years old. These children are frequently emotionally vulnerable, economically unstable. They're frequently runaways, hungry, and homeless. They have been previously abused or neglected. Another warning sign, this is troubling, they've had a contact with the state Child Protective Services system. A new report from UT Austin's Institute on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault highlights the experiences of young Texans who have survived being trafficked, and they have isolated some ways that maybe our community can come together to help these children escape getting into the system and help them escape when they are in it. You can call into the conversation today as we talk about sex trafficking realities here in Texas. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this hour with Bruce Kellison. He's the director of the Bureau of Business Research at IC Squared Institute at the University at Texas Austin. He's the principal investigator of this report. Dixie Harrison is a research project manager at the Institute of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault at UT Austin. Andrea Sparks is the director of Child Sex Trafficking Team at the Office of Texas Governor. And again, the number to call for you to join our conversation is 210-614-8980. Bruce Kellison, the title of the report, "To the Public, Nothing Was Wrong With Me." Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we wanted to add some complexity to what we understand in Texas as the typical child sex trafficking victim. Most people think about an ideal victim being someone locked away, chained up, and unable to escape a 24/7 around the clock situation. And we wanted to add some complexity to that to that understanding. These vulnerable youth that are most likely to be victimized by this crime and of child exploitation are people we see every day in our systems, at schools, in our hospitals, and in the child welfare system. They're the most vulnerable kids already known to us. They're not typical suburban youth. They're already at risk. And so they exist all around us. And many of our victims reported to us in these interviews we did that that they were invisible to the society at large, that the public didn't understand that there was anything wrong with them.
So Dixie Harrison is our other guest, research project manager, Institute on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault at UT Austin. So Dixie, tell me about, there are people who are able to access the child sex world, and there's a market for this, how did y'all penetrate that to figure out what's going on here? How hard is that?
So what we did is we went out and we identified four risk factors that make a youth at risk for trafficking. And that would be any experience with homelessness, experience with the child welfare system or other agencies, having a history of child abuse and neglect, and any sort of interpersonal violence, really. So while we weren't going out and directly seeking youth that we knew to be victims of child sex trafficking, we went out and interviewed youth that had experienced those risk factors, and assessed for their trafficking victimization. So while yes, there are different studies that go out and look specifically at people that are within the system, this was really looking at at-risk youth at large.
Right, because there was a previous report that was done that y'all, I think y'all did it, that really gave us a look at the numbers at the how big this is for Texas and what it costs Texans and support services as well. We already got that snapshot. What we're looking at now, Bruce, is the risk factors, ways that maybe this cycle can be disrupted.
That's right. That's right. We wanted to lay out a number of missed opportunities that we talk about in the report, where people who work with young people can, if they're aware about how sex trafficking works among kids this age, they're able to better spot these vulnerabilities and the potential for sex trafficking going on with kids they see every day.
Andrea Sparks, director of the Child Sex Trafficking Team at the Office of Texas Governor. There's some bills working their way through the legislature right now that could change some of the tools that law enforcement and community leaders have to deal with sex trafficking. This is obviously something that is high on the list of Governor Greg Abbott's agenda.
Absolutely. So the governor's sex trafficking team was formed by the legislature in 2015. And since early 2016, we've been working really hard to, first of all, address the needs of our young victims. We know that there are thousands of victims in Texas who are not being recognized, and this study helps us perhaps be able to recognize them a little better. You know, the study was focused on kids who are seen as high risk. What we're finding is that with more and more kids on social media, and apps where they can interact with those who they maybe think are their peers, but maybe not be their peers, who are actual predators, we're finding that more and more kids are at risk. So yes, definitely kids who've had some kind of break in relationship or a lack of connection, like those who've been traumatized due to sexual abuse or some kind of child maltreatment, but also kids who, you know, maybe are just going through a hard time at home or have some lack of self-esteem issues, kids who have been traumatized by brain injury even, we've seen be more vulnerable to this crime. Any kind of vulnerability that these traffickers and predators can sense and then take advantage of really puts kids at risk.
From the governor's office, you can come at this problem from a number of ways. One of them is the law enforcement angle, trying to deal with the adults who use this market, black market. And also the other one is from the social services side of it. And is that both basically where the governor sees this as coming at this from both sides?
Absolutely. We actually have a very comprehensive approach. So our mission is to help protect children by prevention education, building their awareness of this, their resilience to this by making sure that they have those healthy relationships, those mentors, those CASA volunteers when they're in foster care, and by curbing the demand for child sex trafficking. If we didn't have people wanting to buy children for sex, this wouldn't be an issue. We're also putting a lot of effort into recognizing these victims. These are not victims who are going to come up to us and say, "Help me, I'm being trafficked." I mean, this study really shows that some of these victims don't even understand that they're being victimized.
So right. We're going to talk more about the complex nature of that, how children fall into this trap, how hard it is for them to get out, and what are the opportunities to disrupt the cycle. If you have a personal experience to share, calls and comments can be made anonymous. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. There are 314,000 victims of sex trafficking in Texas at any given time. Of those, 79,000 or 25% of the total population of trafficking victims in Texas are minors and youth under the age of 25. They've been victims of commercial sex exploitation or sex trafficking at some point in their life. That is from a previous study done by the called the Human Trafficking Mapping Project of Texas. Now there is a follow-up study that also takes a deeper look at what are the factors that lead to children getting pulled into this system, where are the opportunities for law enforcement and for social workers to try to pull these children out, disrupt them, reduce their risk factors. If you've got a question or a comment, a story to tell us, your observations, call in. This is a community conversation, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Bruce Callison, you're the lead principal investigator in the report. I imagine, did you talk to these children as you gathered this data?
That's what makes this study so innovative. We did go directly to kids who we know already are at risk, at most at risk for victimization, and we let them talk and then coded their responses and collected them in the report. So in the report, which I would encourage your listeners to read on our the IDVSA website, you can see a number of very complex direct quotes from the victims that we talked to about their experiences. I think that this is one of the things that makes the report so valuable. I would clarify one thing you mentioned, David, earlier. The earlier study found 300,000 victims of labor and sex trafficking in Texas. So it's not all sex trafficking. There's labor trafficking going on in Texas as well.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, labor trafficking is a situation where by force, fraud, or coercion, you are compelled to work. That generally does not include the sex side. It could be anybody working in vulnerable at labor sectors, like farm work, unskilled kitchen work, and landscaping.
And so
unskilled construction.
and are these people who are they like shanghaied and kidnapped off the street and put to work in these places, or are they in the country vulnerable because they don't have legal residence? How does that work?
It's a complex situation. It's hard to generalize. We in interviews that we've done with labor trafficking victims, they come in and out of situations of exploitation that rise to the level of labor trafficking. So you come in and out of these exploitative situations. You're not trapped 24/7 in situations, but As you look for work in unskilled work in precarious labor situations, again, you're more vulnerable to exploitation, and you exist in a situation of labor trafficking and victimization, and then you escape, and then you're still in the labor pool, so you move on to the next job. And people who've been exploited in this situation are coming in and out of these situations over the course of their working lives.
So, Dixie Harrison, what does youth sex trafficking in Texas look like?
Yeah, it looks like several different things that we found, but commonly what we see is that the youth is in some sort of extreme crisis or a period of transition in their lives. So a lot of times we didn't see that a youth was trafficked while in the care of a child welfare system or while in the juvenile justice system, but it's after they age out of those programs or leave those agencies where they're really most at risk of being exploited because of that transition time. We saw that approximately 34% of homeless youth that we encountered at drop-in centers had experienced sex trafficking victimization. We also found that youth were experiencing multiple risk factors at the same time, at approximately double the rates as participants that had not been sex trafficked. So, and then we found that among those youth that had been sex trafficked at some point in their lives. After that first victimization, they have spent about a third of their lives in states of exploitation or being victimized through sex trafficking.
Now, the study found that minor and youth sex trafficking costs the state of Texas approximately $6.6 billion in lifetime care. Andrea Sparks with the governor's office, that's a big number, and that certainly weighs a toll on all sorts of services that the state provides and for taxpayers.
Absolutely. We are really working to leverage the existing resources we have, to leverage federal grant dollars through Victims of Crime Act funds, and building an infrastructure in Texas to coordinate care for child survivors and young adults. We've started in Houston, Dallas, which are basically ground zero for this issue, but also have a lot of anti-trafficking activity already. And we're seeing that the systems we're building through the Child Sex Trafficking Team and all of our partners are working. One of the things that we found from the study that we sort of knew, but we're so happy the study confirmed it, is that it's often a lack of relationship, a healthy adult relationship, that can contribute to these kids being drawn into trafficking, and it's a healthy adult relationship that can help them get out. And so we are really looking at building those relationships for our youth who are trafficked. We have advocacy / case management agencies that we're funding throughout the state of Texas right now, available in 76 counties and soon to be more. And these advocates, we're finding, are really helping these youth kind of regulate their trauma, start to cope with their trauma, and eventually escape from their exploitation. So we're super excited about the initial results of this advocacy program that we're funding and hope to do a lot more.
Bruce Callison, in this report, you focused on areas along the Rio Grande Valley border, Lubbock, and what was the third one? Was that Harris County?
Houston, yes.
So why these areas and what does that tell us?
We wanted to take three fairly distinct areas in the state and look at what we're seeing on the ground in a more agricultural area out in West Texas, in the Lubbock area, and then a major urban center like Houston, and then along the valley in a couple of different spots along the board, what we call the border area. We went out to El Paso as well, as well as the Rio Grande Valley, and we wanted to see if we could detect any patterns, regional differences in trafficking. And what we found was surprised us. The type of trafficking that goes on in these three areas, the types are fairly similar. They're not that distinct. What varies among the regions is the amount of resources that are available to attack the problem. And so in the Rio Grande Valley, for instance, they have relatively fewer resources going on available to minor and youth who are trapped in these situations. Houston has a fairly robust network of service providers available to victims, as does Lubbock.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of demand and the systems can be easily overwhelmed.
That's right. That's right. Houston, of course, is a city of 6 or 7 million, but for somebody who is identified, there are a victim who is identified in that area. There are a number of programs and services available to a victim there that is just not available in other parts of the state.
Dixie Harrison, in the report, there's a discussion about survival sex and how that plays a role in this. And typically it may start out as survival sex for a young boy or young girl and then they get pulled into commercial sex trafficking. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so we define survival sex as someone exchanging sex or sexual acts for anything of survival need, which can be food, clothing, shelter, And in some instances, drugs, if the participant defined drugs as a survival need for themselves, we included it in that. So what we saw was, again, when a youth was in a very particular time of their life, when they were experiencing a lot of vulnerability factors, we found that they use sex as a way to meet their needs.
It becomes a commodity that they use.
Exactly. So if they're under the age of 18, of course, by legal definition, that's considered sex trafficking, and can be gone through the court system that way as well. However, what we're finding is that someone will eventually enter that situation and then start to exploit the youth further into sex trafficking.
And there's a distinction between coerced and uncoerced survival sex. Talk about that.
Yeah, so that definition was what it came out of the data. It's not something that's out in the field of research, but really it was about how the youth was talking about their experience, whether they felt this was the only way that they had at their disposal to meet their needs, or if there was an outside individual that came in and forced them to exchange sex for something that they, a survival need that they needed to meet. So really that it's very nuanced between what is coerced and what is uncoerced when it comes to survival sex.
And this nuanced part of this behavior also comes down to, was I sex trafficked or not? Frequently, the survivors of sex trafficking, you say, don't even know that they were sex trafficked, but this is something that could lead to that. I mean, it seems like, yeah, I have this commodity, I am trading it for this goods or services, and therefore it's not sex trafficking, it's just me surviving.
Exactly. And we heard that from a lot of the youth. However, whether it's coerced or uncoerced, if the youth is under 18, then it's sex trafficking by definition. However, it gets a little bit more blurry when the individual is over the age of 18.
So as a disruptor to this cycle of sex trafficking for the youth, is it a matter of awareness if we're able to teach young people that this is not right, that you should not have to do this? You are still a child and you should not be trading your innocence for survival. Will that be something that could happen, Bruce Callison?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the key recommendations we're making, as Andrea alluded to earlier, is this idea of the need for a more trusted relationships. What does a trusted relationship look like? And over and over, victims told us that they lacked these kinds of trusted relationships. They need to be shown what a trusted relationship looks like and how to get help when those trusted relationships are not there for them. I mean, the number of different types of exploiters that we uncovered in this study was illustrative of this problem. When an exploiter could be a family member, an intimate partner, a friend, not to mention a pimp or a stranger who rolls up on somebody like the victims we talked to. If you can't trust the people in your life to help you, you are at a huge disadvantage when in an exploitative situation.
Did you know that child sex trafficking is an issue in Texas, or is this surprising news? What do you want to know about this problem and its impact on Texas? What's being done to disrupt the cycle of child sex trafficking? What does exit look like for someone who gets trapped into this cycle? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about child sex trafficking. A new report has been released by the UT Austin, the Public To the Public, Nothing Was Wrong With Me is the title of the report. We're talking about child sex trafficking. You can call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Tom is on the line. And Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for talking about this today. California, specifically LA, has a nonprofit called CAST, meaning Coalition to Abolish Slavery and Trafficking. And they're very successful, and I was wondering if there was an analogous organization here in San Antonio, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Andrea Sparks, director of the Child Sex Trafficking Team at the Office of the Governor. I guess y'all are working with multiple nonprofits throughout the state tackling this problem.
Yes, and we actually visited L.A. County when we first got started. We looked at lots of jurisdictions around the country and kind of picked the best models from each one. And one of the things that we learned in L.A. County was that CAST and the other advocacy case management organization there called Saving Innocence was a great model because it helps not only with that healthy relationship that these survivors need to get out of the life, but also helps law enforcement in bringing justice to the perpetrators. So when these kids feel more supported and less punished for being victimized, they're much more likely to participate and feel empowered in bringing justice to perpetrators, to their traffickers, to their buyers, their exploiters. So CAST was one of those that we met with, and we do have a similar organization in San Antonio. It's BCFS, and their program is called Common Thread, and it's a wonderful way to help survivors up to age 25. We're funding that out of the governor's office. For young survivors, they can be matched with an advocate within an hour of being recovered by law enforcement, or if you know of a victim, and they can just call a Common Thread and get that service.
Also here in San Antonio, there is the Roy Moss Youth Alternatives, and they have the Centro Seguro, which they go out into the streets and they look for people who look like they could be trafficked, and they try to provide them support and a place to stay if they would like, and provide them a way out. There seems to be some level of awareness is rising about dealing with this issue, and people do want to provide some support. So Bruce Kellison, how well do you gauge what the level of, how much the public knows about what's going on here?
A good question. I would agree with you. I think the awareness is rising. We see a number of anti-trafficking coalitions popping up around the state. There are a number of coalitions, including in San Antonio, where law enforcement, service providers, and local government are, including nonprofits, are coming together to address the problem in their areas. Now would also be a good time to remind your listeners that the National Human Trafficking Hotline number is 888-373-7888. If they think they're being trafficked or they know someone who might be at risk being trapped in an exploitative situation, that hotline can get them resources right away.
Another caller, this is Renee. Hi, Renee. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My comment is that, some of these children have no one to advocate for them. That's why they're on the street. And so I think it would be beneficial if once we got them, we could perhaps educate them or get them a skill so that they could be self-sufficient and not turn to that life as their only option to meet their needs.
Renee, thank you so much for the call. You hit the nail on the head. One of the issues that's in the report is talking about the economic vulnerability of these children, and they feel like this is all they have in order to generate income. Is that what you found, Dixie Harrison?
You heard that from participants in the study. Our interview tool was trauma-informed, and as part of that, what we did was asked about each participant about their hopes and their dreams and what would help them, what did they see would help them out of this life? And having a job, having a skill, believing that they were worth something more than doing what they were doing, or being out on the streets, having an idea of even who they could go to talk to about what other options they have, were all things that participants talked about. And I think that they have a lot of agency in thinking about, this is what I want to do with my life, and this is how I want to spend my time. And none of those answers revolved around being exploited. So I definitely think Renee was right on the money.
Bruce Callison, we hear this term frequently, the life. They're in the life. What does that mean? And let's get a little, dig a little deeper on that. Why do you think they chose those words, the life, to talk about being in this world of sexual exploitation?
Oh, that's definitely not the phrase that the victims used. I can tell you, and Dixie can provide more context for this, but there's a lot of emphasis in the popular culture around glorification of pimping and the pimp life, and I think that the term comes from that. We definitely need to get away from that as a culture, as a society, glorifying the pimp life and pimping. It's just horrible that there are segments of our popular culture that emphasize and glorify that.
And so, Dixie, can you add a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Bruce is correct in saying that it's a slang that's used in and outside of service providers and participants and people that are quote unquote in the life. But I think that it's a way of saying this is not just something I do, something that I think about and that is affecting me in my entire life. So it's a way of expressing this is my way of life. And so I think that as service providers, we have to remember that as we are thinking about when someone wants to leave, quote unquote, the life, that we have to think about fully wraparound services to help them build a new life that doesn't involve sex trafficking, commercial sex, anything like that.
Yeah, it seems to reflect that this is a different kind of reality and also the dangerous nature of what they're doing. If things go wrong, it can quickly lead to death. That seems to be when you talk about the exit of these people, exploited individuals. How often does that lead to death, Dixie?
That we didn't ask particularly about that in the study, but what we did hear from every participant that had these risk factors is that they had experienced extreme violence, sometimes from the time that they were very young children, all the way up until the point that we were sitting in an interview room with them. And so I think that we need to think about, yes, death, but also the entire spectrum of interpersonal violence that these youth experience on a daily basis, and have that be a very central part to our understanding of service provision.
So Andrea Sparks with the Child Sex Trafficking Team at the Office of the Texas Governor, if you look at this report, what sticks out at you?
Well, what sticks out at me is something I've already said, and that is we know that trafficking often happens to these youth because they don't have someone they can lean on that can support them when they're down and out. And that relationship piece is central. So we know the way we can start preventing this. We can start providing more mentors for at-risk youth. Providing more relationship opportunities for our homeless youth. We're funding drop-in centers all over the state where youth can come in and get their basic needs met rather than having to trade sex for those things. And they can start to build relationship in these drop-in centers and eventually find their way out of the situation they're in and make that choice to you know, that they can leave their trafficking situation and be safe.
But looking at some of the what I'm reading in the report about the attitudes that some of these people have who are being exploited is that they don't see law enforcement and these service providers as someone that they can reach out to. They see them as a threat to their life, and they don't see them as someone who can be a rescue opportunity. I mean, is that something that needs to be addressed and changed?
Absolutely. And, there's probably good reason for that, because a lot of these kids have had very negative interactions with our systems. You know, they might have been arrested. They might have witnessed their parents or others in their family be arrested. We didn't even talk about gang-led trafficking, but that is an occurrence that's just so different than even a pimp-led trafficking or survival sex. And so lots of, you know, negative interactions with law enforcement, child welfare, juvenile justice. And when those folks think they're helping these youth, oftentimes the youth are still traumatized by what they've been through, and they're triggered by it.
Okay. We're going to talk more about that. What can be done? How can we disrupt this cycle of exploitation and figure out ways to provide exit for these young people? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The study is, to the public, nothing was wrong with me. Life experiences of minors and youth in Texas at risk for commercial sexual exploitation, sponsored by the child sex trafficking team of the Office of the Texas Governor. And one of the principal investigator in the report was Bruce Callison, director of the Bureau of Business Research at IC Squared Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. So in the report, you're able to dig around and find that the risk factors for these children being exploited are there are push-pull factors, help-seeking behaviors, and reasons for multiple exits and reentry into trafficking. It gets complicated. You broke it down into this flow chart. We're able to see what kind of factors lead to a child being drawn into this life. And there's this constant cost-risk evaluation that you say is going on as they try to weigh what they need to do in order to survive. Can you talk about that?
Sure. And Dixie can jump in with more detail about that. But we wanted to show in this concept map and the report how complex this problem is. There's not one way into this exploitative situation. There are multiple ways. There are multiple exploiters. Individual circumstances can vary. Environmental circumstances can vary. And as a minor youth evaluates the risk that they're undergoing, they assess the risk that's going on in these situations. They have their own set of complex emotional attachments sometimes to their exploiters. They have their own level of agency. They understand that they're on their own. They don't have very many people to turn to. And so it turns into this cycle that revolves on itself. And they reported, as Dixie said earlier, many victims report spending about a third of their time in exploitative situations, but that means that the two-thirds of the time they're not being exploited, but that they go in and out of these situations in this cycle until they figure out an exit strategy, until there's some sort of intervention. Either the exploitation gets too serious, and the threat outweighs the there are other options, and they find a way out finally.
What's a way out, Dixie? How do they get out?
Yeah, it happens in different ways. Again, the number one way is having a healthy relationship, someone supportive that they can turn to and say, okay, I'm ready to leave, or please help me leave, or however they can do that. A lot of times it's over time building that relationship and being able to understand that there's someone that they can trust that's not their trafficker. So I would say that that's what we heard from participants is the ones that had left, that's how they left.
Now, I've done some reporting in this area. I've talked to survivors of sex trafficking. They tell me they get out because their pimp may be arrested and be put away for several years. And that gives them an opportunity to get away from him. Or they may be arrested, and then they get an opportunity to get away from this individual and start trying and get involved with social services and from being locked up, and then they can find a way out. So is there a role that law enforcement can play in this, Andrea Sparks with the governor's office?
Absolutely. And we are, like you said, we have lots of legislative priorities this session, some of which include mandatory jail time for traffickers and raising the penalties there. And also, our Department of Public Safety here in Texas does an excellent job at investigating these crimes, both in urban areas, but as well as all the rural areas in our highways and byways across Texas where victims are being, you know, constantly moved. So we have a proposal to do specific anti-trafficking squads at DPS. And we think that will go a long way to not only toward identifying victims, but also providing them that immediate trauma-informed response of the victim services within DPS. Yes, law enforcement has a huge role to play, but it's not just law enforcement's problem. We can't just arrest ourselves out of this problem. And that's where I think this report is so important, because it shows us all of the missed opportunities, you know, in that flow chart. Where maybe we could have helped a child who's transitioning out of the foster care system make sure that they have that mentor or that support they can rely upon. Or, you know, while they're in the foster care system, make sure that they get a permanent home and family. And then, you know, just all the different ways we can make it easier for kids to get their needs met when they're homeless rather than having to, you know, rely on selling sex to get their basic needs met. So, law enforcement's a big part of this, but it can't be their problem only.
But, Andrew, what about our education system? Can we educate children to understand that there are people out there who will prey upon them, that will look for them, and will exploit them? If we tell them about the Romeo phase and the gorilla phase and how this works, I mean, is there... I know it's grim stuff, and it may not be... Some parents may not be comfortable with that, but do kids need to know this stuff?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we're working with the Texas Education Association right now to get something ready to provide schools before the new school year. So they are reviewing all of the curricula that we've gathered across the state. We've gathered curricula actually across the country that has some evidence base to it. And there are age-appropriate curricula, even for little ones. There's a way to talk about this that's not scary and that's appropriate. So we've gathered that. TEA is reviewing all of it, and we will be figuring out how to get this to the schools in a way that is, you know, not so expensive and can really help at all ages to start to raise that awareness. It's so hard to prove that prevention works, but we've heard over and over and over again from youth that because they knew, because they had heard about this situation, they were able to, you know, delete the text from the creepy guy and not continue that conversation, or they decided not to get in the car with the young woman who was acting like she was going to help them get out of a situation, but that child recognized that maybe she was recruiting for a pimp. So we do know that it works, and we need to get it out there in our schools, absolutely.
Yeah, these catfish attempts on social media, trying to friend people and then use that in order to turn them into someone who can be exploited. I really want to focus on this little part here. It was kind of a big leaped out at the report about the involvement of child welfare system and how that is a risk factor. Sir Bruce Callison, can you help us understand that really quickly? I mean, is it something in the child welfare system that grooms these children to become exploited, or is this just something that if you're on the path to being exploited, then you're likely to come in contact with child welfare system, or both?
No, I would say neither, actually. The best way to think about it is that your association with the child welfare system means that something has gone wrong in your life, that it itself is a risk factor. It's not that they're being targeted while they're in the foster care system or somehow being groomed by the system. It's that the fact that they're in the foster care system indicates a risk factor. There's some sort of vulnerability already present in their lives that then makes them susceptible to exploitation.
Now, I've heard from people who have survived the system saying, who were in the child welfare system, saying it did groom them to be exploited because they were passed around a lot, they were not treated very well, and sometimes they were put in homes where they were directly sexually exploited. Assaulted.
Dixie, do you have some context around that?
Yeah, I've heard that before too. And I think that that would be something that is different from each person's own experience. So what we found with the participants that we just interviewed was that it wasn't while they were in the system, but it was the risk factors kept compounding on themselves. And then when they exited the system and no longer had a support system was when they started to look to other alternatives to have their needs met.
So when they were emancipated from the system at 18, they didn't have follow-up services, and then they were economically vulnerable, and maybe this is all they really had to work with. Is that what you're saying, Dixie?
Yeah, exactly. And there are a variety of reasons why someone wouldn't have follow-up services. Now there's extended care, and there are a lot of options that child welfare system puts out there to help that transition into adult life. But sometimes, as always, youth fall through those safety nets. And those are the ones that end up being exploited.
And so really quickly, Bruce Callison, can you talk about what, if there's one thing you want this report to kind of bring to the reality of dealing with this problem, what do you want?
The recommendations that we make in the report, I think, is a useful roadmap to what the state needs to do. On the prevention side, we think that education on healthy, trusted relationships that we've spent time talking about today is going to be so valuable in preventing this situation. Early intervention has to include a family, or however that child defines the family situation. We need to get much more culturally competent in wherever we are in the state, and make sure that we have a regional continuum of care, and then continued training for everyone who comes in contact with kids is so important to close these gaps in service.
Bruce Callison is the director of the Bureau of Business Research at IC Squared Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. Dixie Harrison is a research project manager at the Institute of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault at UT Austin. Andrea Sparks, the director of Child Sex Trafficking Team at the Office of Texas Governor. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.